Okay, so our we always open with our information on our IP, which is that anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you have not agreed to this group's IP policy, we cannot consider substantive contributions. So if you're not a member of the CCG officially, please join and agree to the IP policy. This protects us all and the standards that we are working on in the future. We're using IRC in this call. If you've not been in our calls before, we have an IRC channel that you can get to by going to w3cccggithub.io. And there's IRC channel information there. Use Q+ to add yourself to the queue. If you're not on IRC, please ask to be put on the queue. When you are selected to speak, please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always do Q+ again. That's it. Agenda review. So we're going to do our usual introductions, announcements, and progress reports. But the bulk of the meeting is going to be on the DID's unique selling proposition. This is because we're trying to move forward DID to be a working group. And we need to be more persuasive, more precise in how we're doing things. Are there any additions to the agenda that people would like to have? Okay, I'm not seeing any additions. Sorry, did somebody speak?
Oh. Yeah, Christopher, this is Manu.
Go ahead, Manu.
Just a heads up to everyone that the strong authentication and identity workshop, I'll put a link in IRC, the application deadline closes in 3 days. So if you have not submitted an application to participate or a position statement, it's closing in 3 days. So just a heads up.
Okay. So do we have any people that are new to the CCG today? We have a lot of people in the IRC area. Anybody new? Please speak up. Okay, I'm not hearing anybody new. So we go to reintroductions. Bob Dolan, are you in on today? Let's go through the who is Gannon, G-A-N-N-A-N?
That's me, it's Ganesh.
Oh, Ganesh. Why don't you go ahead and, I mean, how long has it been since you've done a reintroduction?
Perfect. Yes. My name is Ganesh Anand. I'm a developer at Digital Bazaar. I am part of the VCWG as well. I'm just here to learn and get to develop a lot of the core technologies around these standards.
Thank you. So we basically have a number of upcoming events that we like to let people know about. Here is the list of announcements. In particular, there is the Strong Authentication and Identity Workshop in Redmond. Information on that is what Manu gave us earlier. That's happening in December on the 10th to 11th. And I would suspect that quite a number of us will be attending that workshop. It's where we're really going to have a chance to pitch DIDs as a solution to a variety of other working groups and other people at the W3C in preparation for our official request to become a working group in the beginning of the year. It's an important event for us. The second one is Rebooting Web of Trust, which is scheduled for February 27th through March 1st. in 2019. Location to be determined. We are hoping to make a decision before the end of the month as to location. We're hoping that, you know, either this event or the September event will be in Europe. So if this is something that you're interested, you're overseas and interested in helping us with, please let the leadership team at Rebooting know so that we can make some decisions. And finally, we have the Internet Identity Workshop in the 30th of May, 30th of April through May 2nd, where we have a lot of people. So any other announcements or critical paths? So just you know, a little bit more on Europe. We have people that would like it to be in Berlin, but we need you know, some more research on that. We also have some people in both Zurich and Lausanne who also want to propose an event, although we've been told by one of them they would prefer it to be in September. So we'll know more. We're going to be looking at all of this later. I don't necessarily want to, Heather, I don't necessarily want to add that to the list. I just want to make sure people can contact us. Thanks. Brent Z, go ahead.
I was just wondering, for those of us who have submitted applications and position statements, when we might expect to hear something back for the identity and privacy, strong authentication and identity workshop.
Manu, go ahead.
That's an excellent question. We don't know yet, but if you've submitted a position paper and the application, you're almost certainly going to be invited. So we're behind on getting back to people. Probably you're going to hear about it after this Friday, probably, which isn't really helpful, right? So you're going to hear about it the last week of November, which is a week or so before the event. But I would just assume if you've gotten that email, if you've submitted both of those things, you're probably in at this point.
Yeah, so that's both the registration and an email with your position statement. Okay, we're going to move on to action items. So somehow a 22 gets added to that URL every time. I think that'll work better. Nope, still something wrong. Well, there it is. Okay, so these are our current action items. At this point, all of them have been signed except for the JWK crypto suite specifications. So this has been an ongoing concern. We have a lot of people who are saying that they want us to use JWK in a variety of our different standards. If we're going to do that, we need somebody to really you know, make a proposal. And I'd like somebody to be a lead on this particular agenda, this particular issue. The issue is here. So if you're part of DIF, you're part of UPort, et cetera, and you're planning on using JWTs, we need no. So Kim, this is not a, I do not believe this is a DCWG thing, because ultimately they can't make decisions about the signature systems. If I'm wrong, let me know, but that's my understanding.
That's correct.
Okay. So Dimitri, you're off. Did you have a comment
No comment. I was going to ask about what about the CBOR-based key notation instead of JWK. But I think that's getting off topic, so never mind.
Yeah. So anyhow, it's still not only an open issue, it's an unassigned issue. I'm concerned about that. I guess that means that we need to have an issue which is the CBOR crypto suite specifications. We need a formal proposal for that. Is that correct?
Yes.
Cozy, yeah. Manu, can you add those as issues? Or you're scribing, sorry.
No, Dimitri. Yeah. Thank you, Dimitri. I will add those issues.
Great, thank you. Continuing on to work items, we have a large number of work items that we have decided to do, and progress is kind of stalled at this point with us really focusing on DIDs and such. But I do want to make sure that nobody has any announcements or changes in any of these in the last couple of weeks. Any changes, updates on work items? Okay, I'm not seeing anything there, so we're going to go now to our, where's the agenda? You know where it is. We're going to go now to the core of our discussions, which is the DID unique selling propositions. So a number of us have experienced in the last couple of months that, we are deep down into DIDs and verifiable claims, et cetera. We have a lot of, experience in talking to each other and, diving into the details. But somewhere along the way, we've lost some of the persuasiveness. I know that we had a response back from, I believe, the which committee was it, Manu, that gave the feedback of, why DIDs?
It came from a couple of other ones, but it was the W3C Technical Architecture Group that basically said, we need an explainer, and we've read your DID primer, and we've read the DID spec, and that didn't help. How is this going to help regular people, basically?
So I attempted to update my slide last week or a week and a half ago when I presented on DIDs, and I think the story was better, but it's still challenging. So I'm hoping that we can make some progress on that. So I thought I'd start off with, I think I told my story last week. Is there anybody else recently that has an experience in explaining DIDs and what the problems were that they had when they were explaining it? Do we have anybody want to offer a story of a recent explaining DIDs? Johnny, go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Just fine.
Yeah, so I'm on the ABMS, American Board of Medical Specialties, and recently presented to them as far as the DIDs working for credentials and verifiable claims. And so I think the struggle that they're still dealing with is, like, ultimately it's about key management, and I think that's still a stumbling block for most organizations is who manages the keys in the organization.
Okay, so you think one of the questions we really need to answer is around key management, or speak of it sooner. Is that a fair representation?
Yeah, and I know that's kind of out of scope for the specification, but it's still a stumbling block to implementation.
Okay. Next is... Manny.
I agree with Jonathan. I'm going at it from the other angle, so I'm going to outline something that has been successful with federal governments and kind of nation-state governments. So fundamentally, many of these organizations don't want to manage identifier registries for their populations, whether it's a tax ID or a business ID or things of that nature. Governments tend to not want to be in the business of managing identifiers. They end up being kind of forced into that because nobody else is going to do it, right? So they don't want a private industry. Many people don't want private industry managing identifiers. And so basically everyone kind of decides that the government's going to manage the identifier, and then all of a sudden the government becomes kind of this target, right? Because along with the identifier, they end up storing a whole bunch of other personally identifiable information, and they kind of become honeypots for kind of attacks. So, if we wanted to hone in on something, I think that the reasons for using decentralized identifiers tend to be different per market vertical, but one common theme that we've found is that the organization, like a federal government, just doesn't want to be in the business of managing identifiers. And because of that, decentralized identifiers are interesting to them because they're the first type of identifier where they don't have to manage it, but there's some cryptographic guarantees that come along with them. And that's it.
Okay. Ryan, go ahead.
Am I coming through clearly?
Yes, you are.
Okay, great. So over the last week, I was working with somebody on a threat model for an application using decentralized identifiers. And we found that it was hard to understand the data model of the application without extending the future use of the system into verifiable claims. That made several things in our threat model kind of make sense as to who the users were and about the data model. I just wanted to add that.
Okay, thank you. Drummond, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to second that. I've tried, multiple explanations over time, but I've migrated entirely to starting with verifiable credentials. Of course, I call them credentials. The case for digital credentials is extremely strong and I think very intuitive for many people once you explain it. And then back into the need for that portable identifier that the holder of the credential can control, and then it just seems to be swept right along. So I just wanted to I've done that dozens of times now, and it seems to work pretty well.
Okay. My recent experience of talking about borders, which is this particular slide in this presentation, I found resonated with a lot of smaller countries, governments that aren't national governments, companies that cross borders, et cetera, which the basic argument is that, we're just more and more part of an international world and changing rules and parties and levels and the old models of, hierarchy and, and one nation don't work anymore. And so that really helps them. I mean, obviously there are all the security risks and things of that nature, but they really appreciated the border thing. Now, that may not work. That worked in Switzerland. That worked in Taiwan. It worked in Malta. It may not work in, the heart of the United States, but that was certainly part of it. back to the queue. Kim, go ahead.
Yeah, for a learning machine, I think leading in with the verified drumming head makes it a lot easier. So in our case, especially if it's an educational credential like a degree, it's something that people buy into the idea that, you know, it's not a short-term claim. They want to be able to use it for their lifetime. So, you know, if you buy into the value of cryptographically proving ownership of it, the key management part is, you know, sort of the natural next question. And so then we mentioned, okay, DIDS, this is a first-class notion, key life cycle that is. Now, various implementations of it, you know, may or may not have these features that we're talking about, but just the idea that DIDS is trying to carve into that space a bit. And so that works really well, but, you know, already that's limiting to an audience that buys into the idea of cryptographic ownership, which I realize that's a different way of, that's a very different audience.
Okay, Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, so two things. One, I tried to get Svea to chime in, but I think she's double booked right now, so even though it looks like she's here, I'm not sure she is. She presented DIDS internally, and the first question back was, what about key management? What do you do with lost keys? So that was Svea, T-Z-V-I-Y-A, Dimitri. But then I wrote this up, and I just want to put this, this is what seems to come out from what many folks have said here. So credentials separated from login management, which means for the subject, you're no longer dependent on the credential issuer for verification. I know that's part of the learning machine story. And then for the issuer, you no longer have to manage the username and password for credentials, was what I hear from Manu and others. So I just wanted to throw out that seems like somewhat of a distillation of some of the things people have been saying.
Okay. AC Hughes.
Thanks, Andrew. So I don't think I've heard a good explanation as to why not another somewhat universal identifier scheme like DNS or certificates. Why are they bad? Is the question I've got. What problem is DIDS trying to solve? Because why is decentralized better? Because have we actually start this again. If we make the assumption that things need to be identified in order to be useful, why do the identifiers have to be decentralized? Why not use an existing identification namespace and scheme, which everybody in the world is already using if they're on the internet?
Yeah. Thank you. Why is this not accepting? There we go. So I really appreciated Kalia's presentation at My Data. At least, you know, the beginning of it really sort of had a nice way of leading into there are just too many identifiers. Like, you know, when you have you know, everybody wanting to be the center of your relationship, you know, then there are just too many of them. Now, whether or not DIDs necessarily solves that is an interesting question, but I like the Kalia's opening of that talk. She has a video. Manu, go ahead.
Yeah, just to riff off of that a bit, I've been hearing lots of good things about Kalia's presentation at My Data, which unfortunately I still haven't had the chance to take a look at, but people feel, at least the people I've talked to, felt that Kalia nailed it as far as an intro there. The thing I put myself on the queue for was that, I mean, like these identifiers, when we talk to customers, they seem like a hot potato. Nobody wants them, right? So the Government doesn't want to manage the identifiers because it's just it's a giant money pit for them, right? It's something that they need to do in order to achieve some secondary thing, but the secondary thing is actually the thing that they care about. They don't care about the identifiers, so they'd rather somebody else do it. The issue is that, you know, then it's like, okay, is a foundation or a nonprofit going to do it? And many organizations seem to say, like, we're not going to trust a for-profit company with these identifiers, and a nonprofit company is not going to be funded well enough to manage, you know, some kind of centralized number registry for all of time. And so it seems like there's this game of hot potato being played, especially around identifiers, where nobody wants it, but they all are very dependent on those identifiers. And then you add that to the other things that DIDs give you, like cryptographic, you know, authentication of some mechanism, you know, service discovery, like a couple of different discovery mechanisms, and they just become this kind of interesting avenue that a lot of people have not pursued. Like, we've pursued centralized identifiers. We've pursued government-issued identifiers. We've pursued corporate-issued identifiers. And no one seems to be entirely happy with those things. And so now, because there's this new kind of technology that enables this new type of identifier, people feel like that's going to actually address some of the problems at hand.
Okay, thank you. Dimitri?
Yes, I also wanted to chime in on the subject of DIDs. Another way to look at it is, in order to have universal identifiers, you need two things: the format of the URL, whatever it's going to be, and then the format of the payload. The format of the payload is essentially arbitrary, so DIDs are a nice standard for that. Like, even if you disregard the fact that they're stored on ledgers or any of the exotic decentralized stuff, somebody needs to standardize what the JSON object is going to look like that contains all the useful things that we want, like cryptographic material, service endpoints, and so on, right? So in that regard, DIDs are very useful because it's a consensus, it's a standard. You're going to need something like this regardless of whatever you come up with, okay? And then there's the URLs themselves. And one way to look at it, not that it's in competition with the current way of doing things, of DNS and certificates and things like that, it's that it's a superset. DIDs can work with existing web URLs, but they also extend onto all of these ledgers that have all of these really interesting properties. So don't think of it as in competition. It's a superset. Okay, that's it.
Thank you. Drummond?
Yeah, I just I strongly agree with that point about DIDs don't compete with other identifiers. They're a new type of identifier. I haven't heard the very first thing when I first got exposed to the acronym DID and the term decentralized identifier. It was from verbiage that Manu and Dave Longley had written in their WebDHT paper. And I love the way they captured it, which is every identifier, that other identifier that we're talking about that's globally available on the internet, is rented. You do not own it. You rent it. And therefore, when that rent expires, you no longer control it. That is absolutely unacceptable from a security standpoint, let alone privacy and everything else. So that's the very first thing I go to is cryptographic control of an identifier that's permanent as long as you have the keys. I mean, yes, it means you got to manage the keys, and I don't duck that issue at all. It's huge. But, you know, just that very simple point, they are not rented identifiers, and I am not aware of another class of non-rented identifiers that individuals or identity owners can control. So just want to make that point.
Other than rotatable. Yeah, another thing that, you know, I haven't heard anybody bring up is vendor and platform lock-in. I mean, you know, I think Twitter really taught us a lesson, the developer community a lesson, when They were so supportive of the developer community. Lots and lots of people were using their APIs, et cetera. And then at a magic point when their VCs wanted to go public, they basically locked down an identifier, made it difficult to use and put limits on it and things of that nature, which killed the third-party ecosystem. So, you know, everybody is just innately suspicious of, vendor or platform lock-in. I think this has limited, this kept, I think, XBI from getting its critical mass. I think it's hurting Blockstack. I think it's hurting Namecoin, et cetera. So we haven't really talked about that. Bern, go ahead.
Yes, so I was going to challenge Manu a little bit here with the problems with existing identifiers and that, you know, governments don't want to be responsible for them, et cetera, and so the decentralized identifiers help solve that problem. But the question I have is really whether the key management issue for DIDs ends up being essentially the same hot potato, because now, again, there's another party that ends up being involved, and you have all the same questions about who that third party should be.
Thank you. Okay, where are we? Drummond, go ahead.
I just have to answer that. I completely disagree that key management requires a third party to get involved. The whole DKMS architecture is built around direct key management by the identity owner. So you can involve a third party, and many crypto wallets do, and it's, as far as I'm concerned, a huge security vulnerability. But there's no need that key management has to involve a third party. Just wanted to get that on the record.
Okay. So I wanted to comment a little bit about something somebody said earlier about, we need the DID document, whether or not it's some kind of centralized identifier or a decentralized one. We also, somebody made the claim that, there wasn't any individually ownable ones. Well, there have been for some time. They're the cryptographic, what we used to call CIDs, cryptographic identifiers. And the problem with those, starting with PGP and going through Tor, et cetera, was because they were based on a single private key, they couldn't be rotated. They couldn't be changed as technology changed. And whereas DID potentially allow for you to be able to retain that DID through a variety of key changes and updates. Dimitri, go ahead.
I just wanted to also mention on the subject of the selling point behind DIDs, I wanted to mention Heather and Kalia's report on the decentralized ecosystem. I think they give a very accessible introduction and some of the selling points behind DIDs.
Manu, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to translate some of the really great discussion that's happening today into written prose, right? So the W3C Technical Architecture Group has basically asked us to effectively say some subset of what we've just said on the phone call today. They've asked us to write an explainer, which is, somewhat frustrating because we've already written a primer and a number of us have tried over the past 2.5-3 years to summarize that stuff in the primer, and they're saying it's not good enough, and they want to understand how, like, the everyday person is going to benefit from it, but in, like, 2-3 paragraphs. So we have to take what we've been saying, and I think that there are some common threads here, and distill it down into an explainer And I was just wondering, you know, who in the community is going to take an action item to do that. I think Drummond and I have you know, tried to do that. I feel like the primer's in fairly decent shape, but they're looking for something else, which means it's probably going to come from someone else in the community. So anyway, just asking openly if anyone's interested in taking a shot at that.
Moses, you're next.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Great. So we're writing a paper about the use of DIDs and credentials in STO security token offerings, and I was wanted to put a shout out to anybody who would like to review the paper and help us, because it's really a complicated area. So send me an email and I'll send you the draft paper before we publish it. Thanks. I'm done.
Joe, go ahead.
Okay. I'll help out with the explainer. I posted the link to the explainer about explainers from the tag. But I would love to have other people to help. I know I work a lot better if I have partners in crime. So if there are other folks who would like to be a part of that conversation, I'll take the lead, and I would love to have your assistance. Excellent. Thanks, Dan. I'll follow up with you, and if anyone else chimes in, I'll put you on the list.
Okay, so there's no one in the queue, and we should move maybe to our next section, which is, you know, getting down the questions that people ask. Just the raw common questions that people have, and make sure that we have answers for that. We're going to try to get through that in the next 10 minutes or so. And then, you know, maybe next week we can look at a draft explainer or go over pain points and such. So I'm not sure what the best way to do the questions are. We could just put them all, type them into the IRC. What do you suggest, Joe? This was your agenda item. Joe?
Yeah, I'd reframe what I was hoping for. So, I mean, we could do it in a Google Doc. What I was hoping for on this call, and we got some of it, which was to ask what are the questions people ask. So not necessarily a full FAQ in the sense of here's where you go to get answers to the common questions, but literally I'd like a list of the common questions. So maybe a Google Doc to kick that off, and then get the folks like Drummond and Manu and others who all contributed stuff on this call to help specifically say what are the questions you get when you give your best shot at how awesome DIDs are, and with the crickets in the background, they start asking questions. So
okay.
Let me actually just go create that Google Doc so we can get it in the notes here.
Manu, go ahead.
So just echoing what Kalia is saying in the IRC channel, key management does come up, but it's definitely not, at least our experience with customers is that they don't even understand that there's a key management aspect to it. In many cases, we deliver software that takes care of the key management for them, and by takes care of, I mean like it's completely hidden from them. So they tend to not even think about that part of the problem. I'm trying to think. Key management does come up. So let me go back. When we typically explain verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers, it's almost always in a very specific context to a very specific customer problem. And we barely even talk about decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials. When we engage with the technical teams, They tend to really have a fairly superficial, surfacey knowledge of decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials, and frankly, like, they don't know or care, right? They care that it's addressing their problem. They care that it's had proper, like, security vetting. But I would struggle to say that many of the customers that have looked into this stuff with their security teams have really dug into the depth that they need to truly be kind of aware of the technology. Now, it does happen at a certain level. At some point, we get handed off to someone else that hands us off to someone else that hands us off to someone else that truly does understand this stuff at depth. And then there's a whole slew of questions that come up, like, what are the economics of the ledger that is storing these decentralized identifiers? What happens if governance structure for the ledger falls over? What happens if somebody drops their phone in a puddle and it shorts out? That's like the key, management questions. But a lot of the other questions have to do around kind of like economic model and governance model around decentralized identifiers. But I struggle to say that we need to even talk about or mention them, because the only people that end up getting to those questions are the people that really want to understand this stuff in depth. And those tend to just not be the direct customers, the people using the product, right? It either works for them and it doesn't. It's like, Google Docs either works for you or it doesn't. And you don't really care about the details of how it's implemented. You trust that some other smart security person / application developer has thought about all of the nasty things around, is my Google Doc backed up? How often is it backed up? Are the right people allowed to view it? Are the access control lists managed in a way that makes sense? Many of those questions are just not questions that customers ask. And that's
okay. It.
Okay, so I'm going to bring it, a thing to the floor. So Heather and Kalia both claim that they have in their report answered a lot of these questions. But it's a commercial report. They would like some way to be able to get compensation for their time and effort. And I don't think the community is in a spot right now where we can basically buy out the whole report or whatever. So maybe one of the questions I ask is, can the community pay Heather and Kalia some smaller amount as a, they're kind of primer to answer some of these top-level questions with a URL to their full report at the end that would be editable and improvable by the community. So do we want to talk at all about passing the hat to, and I don't even know if Heather or Kalia are interested in that. So Kalia, do you want to speak? That's the problem. I haven't yet been paid by HTC. I presume I will be at some point. The others are even slower. So, anyhow, I put it on the table. If you want to pitch, some kind of smaller thing where the smaller developers can pass the hat and have it be a link to the full report, please do. So go ahead, Heather.
So I'm just sitting here listening to this conversation, increasingly frustrated, because this is the challenge that we have working together, and this is this is an ongoing meta challenge we have in this community.
I'm sorry, Heather, you're breaking up a little bit. Maybe a little closer to the mic.
Oh, okay. Is this better?
We'll see.
Hello?
Go ahead.
And I'm watching like these large organizations. They have money behind their initiatives, and the reason Kalia and I wrote this report is because we saw the need for all of these things that you guys are discussing, all of these challenges that we're discussing. We saw the need for this like 6 months ago, and we took our own initiative and did it. But we're not in a privileged position like the authors of the German blockchain organization that have day jobs. And the opportunity of this technology is, like, these companies are going to make so much money. They're going to be building new technologies. I don't know what the pathway is. I definitely have a chip on my shoulder because here I hear this conversation where you're trying to get everyone to work together to answer a bunch of questions that we've spent significant amount of time researching, and we had it reviewed by three different technologists, and we don't want to pay wallet, but we have to be financially compensated because we.
So a lot of reasons. Heather, I'm going to have to. Heather, please. I agree with you. I think we all are very sympathetic. We'd like to solve the problems. So I'd like to move the queue forward so that we can try to solve the problem. I will say that, you know, in the room, a lot of the big companies, IBM, et cetera, are not represented. All of us are having problems getting them to attend, participate in these things, but we want to solve it. That's why I suggested, this one proposal. I'm sure there are other ideas. We'd like to do it, but the people that are in the room right now are not able to help as much as you would like. And I wish I could. I wish others could. It's not happening. So let's find a strategy by which it can happen. And I think, you know, at least my proposal is some kind of subset of your paper that we endorse and push and whatever that has the link to the full paper for everybody who wants to take it to the next level. Don't know if that'll work, but at least it's an idea. We want to solve this problem for everybody. So there's nobody in the queue. We do have a URL to the top questions thing, which I haven't opened yet. So the questions document is there. I agree. Kalia and Heather, it's a problem. I don't know how to solve it. Kim, go ahead.
So the main thing is I feel like we've brought this up a few times, and we, how do I say it? It's not clear what is a model that works. Like, and I feel like it's when we bring it up, we risk, I just don't know if we made progress on how to go about solving it, and I really want to, and I know all of us do want to. So I guess what I'm curious about is, what is a model that, like, Kalia and Heather would like? For example, because I don't know, maybe we're just like trying to propose things that work in the developer community but don't work so well in this case. So, I'm just curious what they think about that.
Okay. Heather, go ahead.
So we were approached, okay, so back up. Everyone has an opinion of how we should do things. I'm not kidding. We've chased up five different models because we really want to make this accessible and available. And clearly none of those models have succeeded. I don't know what to do next. Like, the bounty model was certainly something that we were approached to, but in our conversations, everyone has an idea of how you should do it. And I can't tell you how much time I've spent chasing up the viability of different business models when all I want to do is release this content that we've spent significant amount of time on that I know all of you will benefit from and your clients will benefit from, but I just cannot give it away. Because in my past experience, when I have done that, I was exploited. I was not given a seat at the table. Other people used it and they didn't give credit. And I'm not making that mistake this time. I'm traumatized by my past experiences, honestly. So of IP rape, you know, this is like people taking your content and your ideas. And that's why I'm being such a hard ass here. I do want it to be accessible and available. And I have chased down five different business models that has been approached to me, but I don't know what's going to work. I mean, you tell me, what's it going to take for you to get your companies and your clients to put money on the table for this? Everyone's willing to give developers. They're willing to, you know, we're clearly on this call willing to spend time. Joe's willing to take the lead to write a bunch of stuff. I don't want to volunteer for more stuff. I want to leverage what we've got.
I understand. And I mean, so A, I want to make sure you understand that we appreciate the problem that you're in. Many of us have experience with exactly that problem. Manu can talk to you all kinds of things about IP rate, different things that he's done, his company has done, and has spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on, only to make nothing. So you're not the only one with the problem. I don't think it's personal. It's a industry problem. It's a tech problem. I don't know how to solve it completely. I made one suggestion. You know, take it or leave it. But it is maybe there's a better one out there. I'd like to move forward at the next thing. If you could put a link to the report, at least there's a few of us I've certainly pitched a few times to people. As far as I know, nobody has done it. Like to see it happen. I'd like to see us all do well. So it's 9:58. There's an opportunity for any closing comments. I think depending on whether or not we get some kind of draft or pain, or other things, we'll focus on pain points next week, because we've got to get this document done one way or another. We have to be able to put it into the standards process, which means it has to be open source. It's going to be going on public list servers, things of that nature. So, we can't progress DIDs without, writing up some of this stuff. Doesn't need to be the equivalent of your entire 100-plus page document. We just need a two-page or four-page that is better than the DID primer right now. Let's focus on that. Any last comments? Okay, so there nobody else is in the queue. Everybody, thank you for your stories today, and look forward to working with you in the next few weeks to try to get this down. Thank you. Bye-bye.